Who? Elimelech? Can't say that, can you? Elimelech. Ruth, or Naomi and Elimelech, leave Bethlehem and go to where? Moab. Why did they go there? Because there was a famine. They were hungry. There was a famine in the land of Judah. So they pack up with their children, which consist of who? Two boys, Mahlon and Chilion. They get to Moab, and they're there for, we don't know how long. We know Naomi stays there at least 10 years or more, but at some point, it seems like soon after they get there, her husband dies. After he dies, it seems that, we know that her two sons marry Moabite girls. One of them is named Ruth, and the other is named Orpah. After that happens, those two young men die. Mahlon and Chilion both die, so that leaves Naomi, the widow, with her two widowed daughter-in-laws. And eventually word comes to her that the famine is over in Judah, and she decides to go back home to where her people are. And so her daughter-in-laws are going with her, and at some point along the way, she attempts to persuade them to stay back. You know, your people are here in Moab, you're Moabitess people, why don't you stay here with your people that know you and your customs, your culture, and I'll go on back to Judah, and we'll just all kind of start over. Excuse me. Well, Orpah, she talks Orpah into it. Orpah does stay, but Ruth will hear nothing of it. Ruth is determined that she's going to go with her. She apparently has embraced Naomi's God, the God of Israel, the one true God. And so they go back. They get to Bethlehem, and some of the people who were there recognize Naomi. She's been gone for 10 or so years, but they recognize her and say, isn't this Naomi? And sure enough, it was. They are there, and Ruth, they get there about the beginning of barley harvest, the scriptures say, and Ruth asks Naomi for permission if she could go and behind the reapers who are reaping the barley harvest and pick up the grain that was dropped on the ground that they missed, and Naomi tells her to go and do that. Well, it just so happens, the scripture says, just so happens. It wasn't planned. It just happened this way that the field she happened to be harvesting in or asked permission to harvest behind the reapers belonged to a man named Boaz. And they give her permission to do it, and so she's there coming behind the reapers. Boaz himself shows up and notices this stranger. For whatever reason, we talked a little bit about perhaps why he noticed her, but he did notice her and asked who she was. And one of his men in charge there, the reaper, said, "This is the Moabitess girl that came back from Moab with Naomi." And so he asks her, talks to her, and he tells her, says, "Don't go to any other fields. Stay here in my field, and I'll make sure that you have... you're able to find a place to get your grain. If you get thirsty, help yourself to our water. Help yourself to the things that we have. Just stay here." And she asked Boaz the question, is, why have I found favor in your sight? And if you look on your outline there, we'll look at these points from last week. But first, let's read our text. We're going to pick up the count in verse 11, Ruth chapter 2, verse 11, we'll finish the chapter. So she's asked him, "Why have I found favor in your sight?" And Boaz, verse 11, answers and says to her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me, and how you left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and came to a people that you did not previously know. May the Lord reward your work, and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge." Then she said, "I have found favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me, and indeed have spoken kindly to your handmaiden, though I am not like one of your maidservants. And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, come here, that you may eat of the bread and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar. So she sat beside the reapers, and he served her roasted grain, and she ate and was satisfied and had some left. When she rose to glean, Boaz commanded his servants, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not insult her. And also you shall purposely pull out for her some grain from the bundles and leave it, that she may glean, and do not rebuke her. So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. And she took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also took it out and gave Naomi what she had left after she was satisfied, or the food that she'd had left over for lunch we saw back there in the other previous verse. Her mother-in-law then said to her, where did you glean today, and where did you work? May he who took notice of you be blessed. So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, the name of the man with whom I work today is Boaz. And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, may he be blessed of the Lord who has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and to the dead. Again Naomi said to her, the man is our relative. He is one of our closest relatives. Then Ruth the Moabitess said, furthermore, he said to me, you should stay close to my servants till they have finished all my harvest. And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maids, lest others fall upon you in another field. So she stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest. And she lived with her mother-in-law. Now, a couple of weeks ago, when we looked at the first 10 verses of this chapter, you'll see there on your outline, I was calling that the working of providence. Today, we want to talk about the working of grace. A couple of weeks ago, when we talked about the working of providence, there are four things that I pointed out. The first one was that at times, God touches your life in unchangeable ways. God, in his own providence, with his own reasons, his own purposes, does things to you and for you that he doesn't ask your permission about. He just does it. Sometimes we think those things are bad. Sometimes we think they're not what we really would want. But they happen. And God, in his providence, allows those things to happen. Sometimes they're good. I pointed out one thing last week. We saw in chapter 2, verse 1, that it says, now Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. Here is one thing that God in his providence did for Naomi that Naomi had nothing to do with. She had a kinsman, or her husband had a relative named Boaz. Naomi couldn't do anything about that. Perhaps she hadn't thought about it much. Perhaps she didn't think about much about Boaz. But there's nothing she could do about it. He was her relative. God, in his providence, placed Naomi in Boaz's family. The second thing that we talked about last week was to take advantage of God's providence. Ruth, when they got back to Judah, to Bethlehem, it was at the beginning of barley harvest, and it says that Ruth asked, took the initiative and asked, can I go and glean behind the reapers? God had given her an opportunity and opened a door for her to do something and to do this, and they were perhaps poor people, I would imagine. And she took advantage of God's providence and that opportunity. We talked about, thirdly, to cultivate a beautiful countenance. And we talked about what it was about Ruth that attracted Boaz's attention to her there in the field. And then last, that humility is a virtue, not a weakness. She asks the question to Boaz, why have you looked upon me with favor? We sing a song occasionally here, and I should have sung it this morning, but didn't think about it. But the name of the song is Creator King. And the chorus of the song asks two questions. The first question is, who am I? that you are mindful of me. Talking about, we're talking to God. God, who am I that you are mindful of me? What is the answer to that question? Kind of hard to answer, isn't it? I mean, the answer is obvious, isn't it? I'm dust. I'm nothing. In other words, there is no reason in me that God should even pay attention to me. There is nothing about me that God, and the song and the verses talks about He who made the mountains and the sea, spread out the universe. A God is so big and so powerful and so all-encompassing of the world, and then here I am. Who am I that you would even pay attention to me? The answer is there is nothing. There is absolutely nothing within me that would cause God to shed His love and to pour His love upon me. Who am I that you are mindful of me? I'm nothing. Who am I that you set your love on me? The answer is nothing. So that's where we were at last week. Now we get to this week's message. And before we begin looking at these passages, I want to chase a rabbit just for a moment. The book of Ruth is known, perhaps, as much as anything about the book that is known and that is referred to as Boaz being a type of Jesus Christ. In the fact that Boaz redeemed, we'll see this on in the next chapter or two, he was a kinsman redeemer, and he redeemed Ruth for his relative, Elimelech and Elimelech's sons. And the picture there is that Boaz is a picture of Christ, and Ruth is a picture of the church, and as Christ redeemed the church, it is pictured for us as Boaz redeems Ruth. Now, the point that I want to make, and I've made this point before, but it bears repeating, I think, is when we talk about types, and I talked about this point when we were studying parables, but it's not wise, perhaps, to try to make every little detail in this story fit into that type. Now, I'm going to give you an example of that in our first verse that we're going to look at today. Boaz is a type of Christ. Why in the world would Boaz pay attention to Ruth? Okay, he tells us why. In verse 11, verse that we're going to read today. Why, she asks him, why have you looked on me with favor? He says, because I've heard about you. All that you've done for your mother-in-law since your husband died, since Elimelech dies, all that, I've noticed that. And I admire you. I respect what you've done. That's what drew me to you. Now you see pretty quick how you can make too much into types. You can't, it's not valid to say, okay, then why is it that Christ looked at the church? Why is it that Christ gazed upon the church and upon us with favor? Because we're so wonderful? Because of what we have done? If you want to try to make every connection fit, that would be the connection. But that's not the point of the type. So don't try to make every little detail fit. That is not a detail that you need to worry about fitting into the type. The type is simply that Boaz is our kinsman redeemer. We don't try to make every little detail in the story fit into that in some way. Okay, so let's look at what we're talking about today. The first point is this, that God, in His providence, often rewards grace with grace. God in His providence often rewards grace with grace. She asked the question, why have I found grace in your sight? Boaz is doing something gracious to Ruth, isn't he? He's letting her glean in his field. He's letting her share their water pot when she needs something to drink. He's letting her go in behind his reapers. He's even asked her, don't go anywhere else. We'll see to it that you're taken care of. Boaz is acting very graciously to Ruth. Especially if you look at the fact that Ruth is not an Israelite, Ruth is a foreigner. Ruth is a Moabitess, who the Israelites have a tendency to look down their nose at, right? Boaz is acting graciously. Why is he acting graciously? At least partly he answers the question, because you are a gracious woman. Because you have been gracious to Naomi, your mother-in-law. I've heard about you. I've heard that what the things that you have done and the way you have behaved with your mother-in-law. I've heard how that you left your father and mother and you came to Israel. I've heard how you embraced the God of Israel. One of the most, in fact, you probably have heard this, that years ago Josh McDowell said that the most often quoted verse in the Bible is no longer John 3:16, but it is, y'all remember what it was? Matthew 7:7, judge not that you be not judged. Okay? The most often quoted verse. And yet that verse, listen, don't you listen to me. That verse is not, in its context, is not an absolute prohibition against judging. It is absolutely not. There are plenty of other places in the Bible where we are told to make judgments. Judge not according to appearance, but make righteous judgments. A judgment is simply to be able to distinguish between one thing and another. I can distinguish between good milk and sour milk. I make a judgment about those two things. I make a distinction between an honest person and a dishonest person. I make that judgment. I make that distinction. I make a discernment. All those are almost synonyms. The words are synonyms. When Jesus says, judge not that you be not judged, keep reading. For with what judgment you judge, you shall be judged. And with what measure you meet, it shall be measured to you again. In other words, don't judge hastily if you don't want to be judged hastily. Don't judge someone carelessly if you don't want others to judge you carelessly. Don't make wrong judgments about somebody else if you don't want wrong judgments made about you. That's what he's saying. The same measure that you mete out, give out, it will be returned to you. And we see that here with Ruth. Ruth has been a gracious woman, and that grace is being returned to her from Boaz, isn't it? This past week, or last Sunday, I guess it was, I mentioned a man that died previous week, Clifton Stark. How many of you know Clifton Stark personally? Just two or three of you. Clifton was a year younger than me. I went to high school with him. I've known Clifton since he was about 13 years old. I was 14 years old. We went to church together. Went through high school together. He married Peggy Sarton, who Susan was, her were best friends all through high school. Clifton died about 2 weeks ago, I guess, today. He was a surveyor in the area. Susan and I went to visitation that they had at his church. We stood in line for an hour. To see Peggy. There were probably 100 people in line in front of us. Why do you think there were so many people at that visitation? Let me tell you two or three reasons it was not. It was not because Clifton was a charismatic, handsome guy that everybody just was drawn to. It wasn't that. It wasn't that Clifton was a wealthy man and had a lot of influence because of his wealth. It wasn't that. It wasn't because he was a mover and a shaker in the community. He wasn't. The reason that people were returning grace was because Clifton was a gracious man. I've never heard a negative word said about him. And when you live your life with honesty and with grace consistently, your adult life for 30 years, people notice. Boaz says here in verse 12, look at verse 12. Verse 11, he says, it's been reported to me the things about you. I've heard about you. Verse 12 says, may the Lord reward your work. And may your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge. He says, may God bless you. And somehow I get the idea here that Boaz intends to be used by God to do just that, don't you? May God bless you, and that's what I'm fixing to do. I'm fixing to see to it that you're blessed. God, in His providence, often rewards grace with grace. Number two, God, in His providence, gives grace to the humble. Saw this last week as well. But she answers, verse 13, she says, I have found favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me, and indeed have spoken kindly to your handmaiden, handservant, or maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants. Now she mentions something here. She says, you've been kind to me, even though I'm not as one of your maidservants. I'm not as one of the other maidens that you have out in your field. Now, the implications are that she's making, it seems to me, and you can see if you agree, when she says, I'm not like one of your maidservants, yet you're still showing me favor. Is she placing herself, which makes that comparison with his other maidservants, is she comparing herself as better than them or less than them? Less. That's the implications she's saying. I found favor in your sight, even though I'm not like one of your maidservants. Well, what was different about her? Why did she look at herself in this way? Does she have a self-esteem problem, you think? She was a foreigner, right? She says, there's a reason why I would expect not to be have favor shown to me. I'm a Moabitess. Yet you've been gracious to me. Okay? She's not thinking this less of herself. She's not looking at herself in an unhealthy light. She's just looking at the facts. Here are the facts. I'm a Moabitess woman. Your people will tend to have a tendency to think less of me than they would your own people. People would have a tendency to be favor, grant favor toward their own people, not a foreigner. And yet you didn't. She is a humble person. God gives grace to the humble. Number three, in God's providence, grace is the prerogative of the giver. In God's providence, grace is the prerogative of the giver. What does Boaz tell her? She's out there in the field with these other women coming behind the reapers, right? When they get back to where they're going to rest or where they're going to eat, who does Boaz ask to come eat with the reapers? Ruth. Does he ask the other women that she's been working with all day long? No. Does he see to it that the other women have access to the water? Probably, he probably does. But he makes sure that she knows she does. He tells his hired, the reapers, the men, don't let her glean right along with you. Don't insult her. Don't tell her to get back and well, you get out of the way. As a matter of fact, when you pull some off, just drop it. Just drop some down where it would be easy for her. Just drop it where she can get it. Does he do that for all the other maidens? No, he doesn't. Is Boaz showing her grace by doing that? Grace is unmerited favor, right? We've heard that. Grace is something that you don't deserve. It's not something that you've earned. It's not a right. It's not an entitlement. Grace is the prerogative of the giver. It's his prerogative to give it or not to give it. Now, y'all have heard me get bent out of shape about this subject before, and I'm going to do it again. All right? And there's a reason why this is important. And we'll talk about that in a little bit too. Let me tell you a story. Let's suppose that I go to Daylight Donuts bright and early one morning while their cinnamon rolls are hot. And I buy 8 cinnamon rolls, fresh, hot cinnamon rolls. And I carry them back to a place where there's some people, where maybe the church is, and there are 8 children sitting here. 8 young kids. Could be these kids in this room. Elijah and Anthony and Conrad and Morgan. And here's 8 kids sitting here in the row. Little kids. Nice kids. All right? 8 kids, 8 cinnamon rolls, and me. Maybe 2 dozen, all right? Who the cinnamon rolls belong to? Me, right? So I come to the first boy, Sammy, here, and I say, Sammy, you want a cinnamon roll? I give him a cinnamon roll. I got 7 left. I got 7 boys left. I give one to Frank here. I give one to this guy. And here's Joe. He's number 4. And I get one. I look at Joe, and I just start the other end, and I start giving one to this guy. This guy, and this guy. I'm down to 1 cinnamon roll. I say, sorry, son, and I start eating it. Is there anything wrong with that? Huh? Whose cinnamon roll was it? Mine. Just because I gave one to 7 other kids, am I obligated to give one to the 8th one? No. Did I hurt his feelings? Yeah, I probably did. I probably hurt his feelings. Does that mean the cinnamon roll belongs to him? No. Did he cry because he was embarrassed in front of the other kids? Probably so. Does that mean the cinnamon roll belongs to him? Am I an idiot for being so selfish and self-centered? Yes. Yeah, I am. Does that make the cinnamon roll belong to him?
No.
Am I just a flat-out jerk because of the way I've treated this kid? Yes. Does that make the cinnamon roll belong to him? No. It doesn't. Here's Boaz. Ruth is working alongside these other women. They're dropping grain for her to pick up. What do you think these other women feel like? It's none of their business. Right? It's none of their business. If they don't want to glean, then go somewhere else. It's Boaz's grain. He's the one who hired the workers. He can tell them what he wants to tell them. As long as they're getting paid what they said they were going to pay them, that's all they've got coming. Now, the reason I hammer on that is because of that very thing. It's because of the society in which we live. It doesn't take very long for someone to get something given to them until they're ready. They expect that it belongs to them. Yesterday, I went to, me and Daniel had to do a little work yesterday for a lady that I've worked for off and on for the last 4 or 5 years. Every year at Christmas, she's given me a Danish thing, about this long kind of crescent-shaped dessert thing. Every year at Christmas. Y'all know it's past Christmas, right? Yesterday we were out there, it was the 28th of December, and she gives me this Danish. And I was just joking, I said, I was wondering where it was at. All right? Doesn't take too many years, once a year. Doesn't take, you don't do that two or three times until my mind's going to be on it come Christmas next year, right? When half of the people in the United States are graciously given something from the government. When half the people of the United States, we call it entitlements, but they are not entitled to it. It is grace. When half the people of the United States are given something, either goods, products, or money, for nothing, it doesn't take very long until their mentality is, this is mine. I have earned it. Grace is the prerogative of the giver. If the giver decides to withhold grace, there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. Ruth is experiencing a lot of grace. Boaz is being very kind to her. Boaz is being very gracious to her. Does Boaz have to treat all his other maidens equally with Ruth? No, absolutely not. And he doesn't. He doesn't do it. And that's okay. Number four. God in His time makes known the depths of His grace. God in His time makes known the depths of His grace. You remember when Naomi came back from Moab. She was down the dumps a little bit, right? She says, I went out full, I came back empty. Don't call me Naomi, call me Mara, or call me bitter. I am bitter. Just change my name to bitter. Don't call me Naomi. Call me bitter. I went out full. I came back empty. And at this point in the story, which apparently hasn't been very long, because they got back, came back at the beginning of barley harvest, and here we are still in the barley harvest. So it hasn't been very long. But Ruth has already developed a reputation, hasn't she? Ruth has already developed a reputation for being a kind person. Ruth has developed a reputation because of how she has treated Naomi. Now she's dealing with Naomi. Do you think Naomi has recognized this yet? Everybody else has. You think Naomi's catching on that this Ruth girl, I'm glad she came. You reckon? Okay? You would think so. Sometimes the person who's the recipient of our kindness is the last person to see it. But I would think that Naomi is starting to experience and to recognize Ruth. I'm glad she came. I'm glad she's here with me. Now she sent Ruth out to glean. And Ruth comes back. Naomi perhaps is already seeing the depths of Ruth's grace and of God's grace to Naomi through Ruth. And here, this one day, she comes back from the barley harvest, and Naomi's kind of taken back. Naomi's kind of said, what is going on here? What made Naomi sit up and take notice? I think it was a big old basket full of barley. I think Ruth had more barley in her bucket than Naomi was expecting. It reminded me when I was a kid, we were talking about this small group, I think. I hadn't started school. Before I started school, and my older sister is 2 years older than me. She couldn't have been past the first grade. So she's a first grader, and I'm 4 years old. My mother had given us a nickel, probably, to go down to the little store about two or three blocks away. Now, this is back when you could send a four-year-old to the store by himself with a nickel. Okay, we go to the store, and we come back, and my sister is eating a candy bar. Well, my mother is kind of like Naomi here. That candy bar is a lot bigger than the money I sent with you. Okay? Where'd you get the candy bar? You can't buy that candy bar with a nickel. What do you think happened? Where do you think my sister got the candy bar? Guess. She might have stole it, maybe? Okay, that's what my mother thought, that she stole the candy bar. But my sister was a little ahead of her time, I guess. And if I remember the story right, my sister told the storekeeper, I'll pay you later. Picks up the candy bar, I'll pay you later. And me and her walk home. She started to eat this candy bar, and later ended up being about 10 minutes when my mom found out. They marched back to the store a lot quicker than we made at home. Well, that's what my mom, she sees this candy bar, she says, wait a minute. Something ain't right here. Okay? You ought not to have a candy bar. Where'd you get the money? It's kind of like, I think, how Naomi's thinking. Naomi's sitting here at the house, and if you look at verse 18, she took her basket, this is Ruth, took up her basket, went to the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also took it out and gave Naomi what she had left after she was satisfied. This was the meal. Remember, she ate at the meal and had some left over. Well, she gave her mother-in-law, Naomi, the rest of the meal she had at lunch that day. And here's this basket of grain that's more than Naomi thinks she ought to have. And what's Naomi saying? What's going on? So what's Naomi ask her? The most obvious question she's wanting. Where were you at today? Where did you glean today? Where did you work today? Someone has been very kind to you. May God bless the man who showed you such kindness. That's a big basket of barley you've got there. And here again, Naomi is seeing the depths of grace. Between here and the end of this chapter, Naomi is doing a lot of thinking. Naomi is starting to put some pieces together. I have a feeling that Naomi is thinking, you know, I believe God's going to bless this girl. It seems like every time I turn around, something is good is coming to me through her. You look back at chapter 2 and verse 1. It says, Now Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. You know, that verse is just stuck in there. That doesn't mean that this is the first time that Naomi or that Boaz comes into the story. That verse is just put there so that we will know a few verses later on when it says that she just happened to glean in the field of Boaz. At this point, Naomi has not given Boaz a thought that we know of. She doesn't know that Ruth went to Boaz's field. She hasn't thought about Boaz. There's nothing about Boaz in her mind until Ruth comes back that day with a big basket of barley, and she looks at the big basket of barley. She says, Where did you glean? And Ruth says, Well, is this man... His name is Boaz. Ha! For the first time, Boaz comes to Naomi's mind, I think. Boaz. And the wheels begin to turn. God's been gracious to this girl, Ruth. God has used Boaz to be gracious to this girl. You know, Ruth, Boaz is our relative. We won't go past that, unless Marshall get on to me again. Point number five. The wheels, what's the saying? The wheels of progress are slow or something like that? Is that the saying? I don't know. Something about the wheels of progress. I'm not sure what it is. Anyway, here's my saying. The wheels of God's grace may seem slow, but they are very sure. The wheels of God's grace may seem slow, but they are very sure. God's got his hand in this picture, doesn't he? And it goes from the beginning of the barley harvest, God is directing the affairs of all that's going on. And it goes to the end of barley harvest. She stays working in his field from the barley harvest through the wheat harvest, which was a month or two after that. Living with Naomi all the while, and the story begins to unfold and continues to unfold. I want you to think about how we can apply this to our life. Number one, be gracious. Be a gracious person. Number two, be humble. Be a humble person. Don't think of yourself more highly than you ought to think. Number three, be understanding. Understand the things and be discerning about the things around you and your own relationship with other people. And be confident. Be confident that God, who began your life, began the work in you, will complete it. Let's pray. Father, as we read your word, as we read this story, God, it's not just a story, it is history. It happened. God, you've written it down for us to know that it happened. And God, to see how your hand has been at work generation after generation after generation. God, would you help us to just model the grace that we see shown from Ruth and God from Boaz as well. God, help us to be thankful and grateful to be like Naomi, God, to be the recipient of such kindness. God, help us not to think it's because we're so special, to not think it's because we're so wonderful, but God, to acknowledge that it's because in spite of our own failings that grace is extended to us and shown to us. God, we love you. We love you because you loved us first. God, we love you. Amen.